What?
Of the Brits. Where?
Oh, it's in Voracious. You know, this is Rob Ramavino.
You know where?
Yeah. I looked up the sources before I gave the... if you want to... All right, maybe I'll... If that's what you're interested in, I'll say that over. All right?
Yeah.
Isn't this a Mark, now, the other... What?
Isn't this a Mark Lucas and the, between the Rambam and... I forget his name. Mitzvah Schema? I'm not sure where else it was.
About what?
About Briss. There's a Rambam... I remember Ray Hart took it up. Rambam says that it's to show that physical existence isn't the main thing. I forgot the other side now, though.
Well, I'm not... obviously, I'm not... I'm not saying that there aren't any other approaches. Whenever I give an answer or an explanation, I'm giving what makes sense to me, or, you know, it could be based upon the Rambam. The thing is like this. I think the idea that I'm saying over here is not going to be exclusive. I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that there aren't other ideas. That this is very rare that you can have one, you know, one idea that's going to cover everything there is. I'm saying everything there is to say about that. I just wanted to add a little point to help us understand it a little bit better. I mean, I know that there's a machlokas. Mordechai?
Yeah.
Do you remember? I think the machlokas was, I think the Rambam held that, yeah, I think he said something in the Mor Nevuchim, I don't have the Mor in front of me, that the act actually weakens the organ.
Right.
That's right.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, I wanted to base myself on that. Now,
that's right.
If there's an argument, you know, between the Rambam and others, and that's something else. So if you want to do a study of all the positions, and you're still going to have the same issue. You're going to have to explain what the Rambam, how the Rambam understood it.
Right.
And there may be others that understood it differently. So, I mean, I'm basically, the interpretation that I gave was clearly in line with the Rambam. Do you know where it is in the Mora?
I'm looking for it.
Yeah, let me see. I don't have everything in front of me over here.
Do you know where it is in Voracious?
Yeah, in Voracious. Let me just hold on, all right?
All right.
I'll try it. It's at the end of Lech Lecha, if I'm not mistaken. Pretty sure. Yeah, here it is. It's Akimosius Risi. That's in Voracious Yud Zion. And in our parsha over there is it starts on Yud Zion. You have to go quickly through Yud Zion because that's the whole parsha of the Bris. And then God says, okay, this is the Osa Bris. The Osa Bris is Unamaltim. So, again, I'm going to go see if we have a Mora over here.
I found it.
I know, but I want to be able to look at one over here.
So
if necessary, we'll just use yours. Hold on again.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a Mora. Yeah. All right, did you guys look at the parsha?
Yeah. It's in Zion, Vakimosias Brisi.
Yeah, but I mean, the whole parsha of Zion.
Yeah.
Is how we'll find it by Yitamim. Yet in the Brisi, by Nevenecho, Viarbos of Mavod.
That's right. Zion.
Yeah, then there's the changing of the name. I'm not going into every aspect of the parsha. It's interesting. The changing of the name.
That's right.
Okay. Then Vakimosi Brisi Beinu Veinecha. Veinzarachach Lecha. Odarosam Bris Olam.
That's right.
The Yosucha Little Kim. Uzarachach Lecha. Then it says that, you see, that's the Bris is tied in with the land. The Nasati Lecha. In other words, it's very fascinating because you see that immediately after the idea of the bris between you and your children, then the nasati lachar ulazarachar es eretz megurecha es eretz kam achuz azolam vayishi lahem. So the right to the land is clearly contingent on the bris. And, without the bris, there's no land. It's not a nationalistic or a political or any kind of phenomenon other than bris.
Hmm.
It's inconceivable. If there's no bris, there's no land. That's part of the problem that we're in today, but that's something else. I mean, that's the tragedy that if Klal Yisrael or the Jewish people, whatever, decide that they're going to create a nationalistic type of an entity because historically the Jews lived there, and seek to maintain the land outside of the bris, without a return to the bris. I mean, ideally, the way you want to return to Israel, you have to return to the bris. And if you return to the bris, then the land follows. This is the dilemma that we're in. But you see from the psukim that there's no kiyum except through the bris. Vayomer Kim Lavram V'atas Brisi Tishmar. Now we're talking about the keeping of the bris. Now the keeping of the bris has to do with something very specific, with a particular type of mitzvah, and the essence of that mitzvah is that it connects us to the phenomenon of the bris. I mean, so we're using bris in two terms, in two senses here. People have to be aware of that. That we use the word bris, we're thinking about the milah, the circumcision. But the bris, the idea of the bris is a covenant, so to speak. That's the translation, I guess. It's probably the best if you're going to translate it. It means that there is a special relationship between two partners that we accept upon ourselves to live under a certain type of jurisdiction. We're living under the jurisdiction of the creator of the universe. And it's so to speak, obviously, there's obligation, so to speak, on both sides. We're applying it. God has his responsibility, so to speak, in the framework of the bris. There's nothing wrong with saying that. I mean, Rashi points that out many times, like in the, by the Havas Bikurim, we say, what if we did Meiser, we say we've done and we've fulfilled all our responsibilities and so forth, according to everything you commanded us. Then we say Hashkifa Mamon Kachacha, that you should bless us and so on and so forth. And, Rashi, maybe other places, Rashi says that, we fulfilled what we have to do now, and now it's up to you to do what you promised us, so to speak. I mean, it's not meant disrespectfully, obviously.
Yeah.
And very often Rashi, the Midrashim, attribute God saying that, when God blesses us, that you've done what you have to do now, I'll do what I promised us. That type of a concept. So that's the idea of the bris. However, there is the oath bris. Because then it says, Zos Parisi Asher Tishmeru Beini Veinechem Uvein Zarecha Acharecha. Imo Rachem Kol Zachas. Unimaltem Es Tesar Alaschem V'hoyel the oath bris. You see, there's the oath bris. That's where the pasuk introduces us. That when the bris was created, it was essential that there be a particular mitzvah, which that's the very essence of the mitzvah. I mean, once you have a bris, so then you have mitzvot. Once you have a bris, you have mitzvot. Of course, that's part of the arrangement. That's part of the covenant. But, like all the mitzvot, Shabbos is also an oath. But by the way, that's another thing we have to study. There's different types of osos. Many of the mitzvot are osos. Which means that the... it's the concrete expression of a certain idea. That's the idea of a sign. Like Shabbos is an oath. What's the oath? That we are giving concrete expression to the belief that the entire world exists only because of Kadosh Baruch Hu, that the 6 days of creation, and on the seventh day, God rested, so to speak. That is, the entire system came into being, came into motion. Mm-hmm. So that's an oath. That's why Shabbos, that's why Shmir Shabbos is so important. That's why that a person is Mechal Shabbos is akin to Avodah Zarah. That's why it's so serious. Why is it Avodah Zarah? Because he's denying creation. And and then there's other mitzvot which aren't an oath. Not every mitzvah is an oath. Tzila, mitzvah Tzila, Kriya Shema, Talmud Torah, etc. These are all the conditions that need to be there, because that's the relationship. The relationship is that we're living under the jurisdiction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We're living a certain type of an existence, which has a purpose, of course, in terms of our own perfection. We bring ourselves to the highest level of perfection. And also we fulfill the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the creation, that it's an instrument for all of mankind. That's clearly the Mamlechas Kohan of Gai Kadosh, that there should be a nation which reflects the true Derech Hashem, which is God's will for all of mankind, of course. Okay, but this mitzvah is different in the sense that it's a mitzvah which is about the very bris itself. You understand?
Yeah.
Okay. But there had to be a specific mitzvah which is not a result all the other mitzvos are a result of the bris. That once you enter into the covenant, okay, this is what you have, these are the laws you have to keep. If you're going to be in the, but here the very mitzvah is because of the very phenomenon, the very fact of the covenant itself. That's what is, because you see, that's how it's presented. This is the oath bris, the hail oath bris, that you can't have, this bris can't exist without the oath bris. Okay, so that's basically what I wanted to try and explain. All right? Now,
you're saying the acceptance of this mitzvah is entails the acceptance of the bris, or the acceptance of the bris entails the acceptance of the oaths.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand.
Unlike yeah, I mean, it's not, if a person doesn't see that, then he doesn't understand the circumcision. I mean, what's the point of circumcision?
Yeah.
So it becomes, you know, like everything else, another blind ritualistic thing, which a person has no concept of what he's doing. But the whole idea, well, that's the bracha, by the way. There's two brachos. One is, of course, on the mitzvah.
That's right.
Because it's a ma'aseh mitzvah. Mm-hmm. But the second one, the mild usually says that, you know. The first bracha. Then the, because he's performing the mitzvah. But then the Av says, lachniso b'vriso shel Avraham Avinu. That the, yeah, that explains why, I mean, I'm just going to get right to that point, that the reason why this mitzvah is different and why it must be performed on a child, even though the child is not chayiv in mitzvos, that's true, he's not chayiv in mitzvos. But the nature of the mitzvah is to give him a certain identity. That's the kiyum. There's the ma'aseh mitzvah and then there's the kiyum mitzvah. The kiyum mitzvah is to change the individual and to give him a certain identity. And the, from a halachic standpoint, it means that he becomes a ben bris. That is, mitzvah is a result of that. First, the person has to have a certain status that he's part of the bris. He's a ben bris. That is not, has nothing to do with the fact of being 13 or not 13. That's just a phenomenon of identification of what's my identity. See, the entire mahus, so to speak, of an individual is affected by the phenomenon of bris. You also, I mean, you see that's why that's one of the requirements in conversion. We can't have conversion without bris. Because that's the essential defining point. That's the osa bris. It defines the gafra as being a ben bris, as being a part of this covenant.
How are you doing that to an 8-day-old child?
What do you mean? You're giving him an identity. This is the osa bris, so that's the identity. It's not something, by the way, that a person accepts upon himself voluntarily at this point, because once the Jews accepted the Torah, so they entered into the covenant. And the covenant is for all generations. But the covenant has to have the sign of the covenant. If a person rejects the sign of the covenant, he's outside of the covenant, so then that's it, he's finished. He has no existence. The truth of the matter is that it's very fascinating. I'll try and also connect this to the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. Uh-huh. If I forget, you'll have to remind me. Because there's only two mitzvahs asay. There's only two positive... generally speaking, the punishments are much more serious for the los asays.
Right.
As you know, then for the and in fact, for most of the essays, a failure to perform an essay doesn't carry any punishment by Beis Din.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, you judge, and that's a different story. But in terms of Beis Din, malchus and so forth, there's no malchus for the violation of an essay. If a person fails to eat matzah, he's not liable to any punishment by Beis Din.
The Rebbe, how does that...
If a person fails to do bris, if he... It's called bittul asay. If he negates the asay of bris, so then he's chayav kares. The same is true with regard to Korban Pesach. That at the time of the Migdash, when we have the Korban Pesach, if a person fails to bring the Korban Pesach, so that's also... It's a mitzvah asay, but the bittul of that mitzvah makes him liable to curries. Yeah, what were you saying, Glenn?
As far as the father, I mean, how does this idea that the son should have this identification Machayev's the father to give him the bris.
Hold it a second. Let me get to that part. I'm trying to take it step by step. Let's just explain the oath, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So what is, so what's the idea? What's the idea specifically of the, what is the sign? What is the, like getting down to the, you know, the concrete, the physical, what is the idea of the act of circumcision? The removal of the arla. Now, there's many levels of significance over here. I'm not going to go, for example, the Torah speaks about the arla chalev. That, you know, there is a concept. You know, that you should circumcise the arla, the foreskin of your heart. So you see that there's a very significant concept attached to it. Because that's obviously can't be taken literally. Well, what does that mean, that a person should... anyone who interprets it literally, you know, it's insane. You take a knife and you circumcise your heart, it's crazy. So obviously there's a concept over here. The arpacham was akshuot, but the pasuk itself right there. Gives you the direction that your neck should not be stiff. So it has to do with a certain type of a stubbornness that has to be removed from a person. And this stubbornness is a serious obstacle to a person's perfection. But I want to be more specific. I mean, I'm trying to tell you that I'm not doing this right now, but you can look up the Ramban I think it's Mitzvah, I'm not sure, in Devarim, where it talks about, you know, he says it's a reference to Yemos HaMashiach.
I'm sorry?
No, that's not the one.
What does that mean again on the Maltem?
To circumcise.
Oh, I thought you had
it. That's Mila. What does he say? Umal Hashem L'Kech. It's an interesting, fascinating idea that in Devarim, in two places, it speaks about the circumcision of the Arla Chalev. And in one place, we're commanded to do it. Mark that down for another shir. I mean, I'm throwing out a lot of stuff here. And I can't go through all of them. I'm just giving you what to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's very fascinating. I think the first reference, I believe, is in the Akev. And the next one, I'm not sure, but I think it could be in the Tzavim. I don't want to... You'll look it up yourself. But in the first place, Moshe says to the Jews that unamaltam, that you should circumcise the foreskin of your hearts, and your necks will no longer be stiff. You won't be a stiff-necked people. But then later on it says... And this is a reference to Achlas Hayamim, Umalad Hashem Alkechas L'Avcha, that God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's, what does that mean, that God will? And also, I mean, it seems to be a little bit ambivalent, because in one place it's saying, we're supposed to do it.
Okay.
In another place it's saying, God will. So, all right, these are all, and what's the whole concept? Okay, I'm not really going into that so much right now. I wanted to... You know, just convey the, I would say sort of like a Tama mitzvah in the sense of the explanation of what the mitzvah represents to the best of my ability.
Mm-hmm.
What is the idea? There has to be an oath bris. That's not a difficult thing to understand. You know, that's a normal kind of a thing. But why this? Is there any way that we can understand the specific sign that was chosen? You know, the act of Mila, the removal of the foreskin, so to speak. Is that just an arbitrary thing? Or is there a significance to it? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what page is it? I have the paperback. What page is it in the Rambam?
378.
Morty, put this on the Gemara that says, thanks.
I'm just giving me 2 seconds or so, okay?
Okay.
To me.
I want to get something.
You shouldn't be stiff-necked people?
Yeah, why don't you be stiff-necked people?
So, before I go into the Ramam, let's just have a general idea of what's the idea of the bris. What is the foundation, so to speak, of this particular relationship? That God is establishing a relationship with a specific group of people. So what is the basis of that? Why is God doing this?
Mm-hmm.
What is the point? What did these people do to warrant that God should create this, institution. Okay? So I'm going to keep it right now. I'm going to keep it in general terms, and you're all familiar, because this is by way of introduction. I'm not breaking any new ground over here. We've said it many times, but it's part of the context. That essentially, what renders Abraham unique is that he discovered the true God. That is to say that the entire world was steeped in idolatry, which is religion, which is God, worshiping gods, but it's not the God of reality. It's the God which man creates. It's the God of the human psyche, which is a projection. So that's all false. And he was able to free himself. And of course, it's rooted in very powerful emotional needs and so forth. And it leads to a complete corruption of human existence. And he was able to discover, to renounce all of that, and to discover the God of reality, the creator of heaven and earth, the being who set the entire system into motion. And the manner in which he was able to arrive at a recognition of this being was precisely through the study of the tremendous Chachma, which is a manifestation of this being, the infinite Chachma Hashem that he encountered in the world of reality. So these are the basics. And then he was able to free himself to redirect all of his energies towards the recognition of this being and to fulfilling the purpose of this being in the universe. I mean, that made him very, very distinct. That's Kol Olam B'Avraham Echad. The entire world is on one side. The Avraham B'Avraham Achar. And Avraham was on the other side. I've covered a lot of ground in a couple of sentences over here. This is tremendously significant. But we're familiar with this thing. I'm not saying any Chidushim over here. So that, of course, is the primary idea of the bris. That God enters into a bris with those people, and only those people, who have the correct idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And have renounced, there's two parts to that. The correct idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu and an absolute renunciation of Avodah Zarah, of any falsification of anything to do with a Kadosh Baruch Hu in terms of recognizing who the Borei Olam is. That's Halach L'chmanei Vayei Tamim. That's Tamim. It has to be complete. It has to be perfect. There can't be any kind of a slippage over here, any kind of a deviation. In terms of people do this all the time. You see, it's prevalent. I mean, the world is filled with Avodah Zarah. People are living their lives on the basis of all kinds of mystical feelings, superstitions, and premonitions, and all of that. All of these things are Avodah Zarah. That is, it's the implication is that there is other forces out there, lucky stars, and so on and so forth. So that's not Tamim. Even if the person consciously says he believes in God, the creator of the universe, but lives his life as though he's afraid of other forces, so then there's no Tamim over there. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wanted that has to be constantly reemphasized. So that's one aspect of it. But I think that there's another aspect to the bris. And that is to say that the bris has two major ideas. One, of course, pertains to God. What is the correct idea of God? We don't know God. But our idea of God, that's important. We have a correct idea of God. That's extremely important. Insofar as the human mind can gain a correct idea of God. I mean, then of course, we're limited beyond that point to know the actual essence of God. That's Kilo Yerami Adam Vachai. But insofar as we have a concept of what we mean when we speak about God, exactly what we're saying, that it's not a power that is connected, it's not a force of nature or any higher force of nature or any power that's connected to the universe, but it's a being who's completely outside of the framework of the universe. And does not consist of anything which can be duplicated. There's nothing physical, and so on and so forth. The idea of Yichud Hashem, and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's the correct notion of God. Now I want to say that there's another idea over here, and to have the covenant, it's a relationship between God and a certain type of a people. Now, the other idea of the covenant is idea about the definition of Adam. What exactly is Adam? And this is, I mean, obviously the two ideas are just as important for the sake of the covenant. And that is that the other mistake that people make is a misidentification of what man is. And this is the eternal battle that the Jews face with the rest of the world. The rest of the world looks at man as being just the more sophisticated animal. It's essentially physical. Just a being who's composed of mechanical forces, instinctualism, and so on and so forth. And that's why the whole philosophy, I mean, this leads to a certain philosophy. This is the prevailing philosophy, and it may be harder to uproot this philosophy than it is to uproot the false religion, but I think there's a connection between the two anyways. The entire world is living in accordance with the false philosophy, and that false philosophy is that the essence of man is his instinctual, emotional makeup, and that the purpose of human existence, or the everyone is striving for, you know, the so-called pursuit of happiness has to do with the satisfactions of man's instinctual nature. And it could be on a gross level, it could be on a sophisticated level. If a person, on a gross level, it could be just pursuing ordinary physical hedonism. On a more sophisticated level, it could be art, which is basically hedonistic, which you see, most of the art is the glorification of man. And a lot of the art, going back to Greek times even today, has to do with the portrayal. You see, when you have an art and it's portraying the beauty of the human form, that's all of others are. That's the deification of man. And it's not just that, generally speaking, it also has to do with the naked body, with nudity. So you see, it has to do with the glorification of the instinctual, of the sexual, and so forth. I mean, it can also have many more sophisticated forms. It could be ego, to, you know, a person building a tremendous empire. It could even be constructive. It doesn't mean it's necessarily destructive. A person, you know, could be an economic genius, and he can build, he can build a mighty empire, so on and so forth. But essentially, it's really rooted in the instinctual. So that's the ego, different expressions of it. But essentially, the idea of the covenant is that the essence of Adam is Tzelem Elohim. See, these two ideas, of course, are connected to each other. That the reality of realities is HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is God, and that everything that exists is because of creation, the Borei Olam, and that within the creation there's one being who has the form, so to speak, physically is composed of this, you know, the same instincts, and partakes of animal existence, but he's a different type of a being. The essence is, you know, that of Adam is that he's a Tzelem Elohim, and the physical is not the essence. It's the complete opposite. That the physical, with regard to every other animal, to the contrary, I mean, that's the essence is the instincts, and that's why it lives an instinctual life, and when it does so, that's good. It's fulfilling its purpose. That's Tov. But in Adam, the instinctual is completely different. It has to be harnessed, and it has to be subdued, and the purpose, we don't know God, why, but that's God's will. There should be one being within the framework of the physical who has the capacity to overcome the physical and to utilize the physical in the objective of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the real essence is a being that's been endowed with Tzelem Elohim. That is, that he has a component which does not come from the physical, and it reflects. It's a reflection of the existence of a higher being which is not physical, which is a non-physical type of existence. And Adam is endowed with that element, and he too can partake of that, not to his level, of course. It doesn't mean he's like God in that sense, but it's a reflection. That is to say that he's like God in the sense that he has the capacity to obtain chachmah, understanding, knowledge. That's the essence of what we know of. And by doing that, he's able to redirect his manner of living and so forth. Of course, I mean, to perfect that element through imitation. That's the idea that ma'ani afata, to remold himself in the image, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it manifests itself in living in existence, which is based upon Chachma. But it's not just that he obtains Chachma, he's got to perfect himself. Now that's based upon the idea that the essence of man is not an animal, but he's a Tzelem Elokim, and the Tzelem Elokim has the capacity to overcome the animalistic. That's the essence of what a Jew is. That's the second proclamation in terms of the bris, when you enter into the bris. Now it seems to me that this is the perfect expression of the Oz Bris. So let us just take a look at the Rambam. And I'm basing myself on the Rambam. I'm not apologizing, obviously. Our task is to, to base ourselves on the legitimate sources and to try and explain them in a way which makes sense. But this doesn't mean that, there's a Rambam, whatever, somebody else can argue and have a different interpretation. And, fine, so the task is to make sense out of that approach. Not always necessarily mutually exclusive. Okay. Now, as regards circumcision, this is on 378. I said one of his objects is to limit sexual intercourse and to weaken the organ of generation as far as possible and thus cause man to be moderate. Some people believe that circumcision is to remove a defect in man's formation. But everyone can easily reply, how can products of nature be deficient so as to require external completion, especially as the use of the foreskin to that organ is evident. This commandment has not been enjoined as a complement to a deficient physical creation, but as a means for perfecting man's moral shortcoming. This is a beautiful, beautiful idea. And that what the Rambam is saying is that, no, from a purely physical standpoint, in terms, you see, God created every physical being in the most perfect way. The idea is unbelievably beautiful. In the most perfect way. Mm-hmm. And so too, insofar as Adam is a physical creation, he was created in the most perfect way. So insofar as that's concerned, so then in terms of that part, that organ, that part of the body, it was determined that it should have a foreskin. That's the best. So the Rambam rejected that idea that the mitzvah of circumcision is to correct a defect. To the contrary, the bottle is really the only case, actually, where we're being commanded to perform an injury to the body, which is, of course, otherwise prohibited. You know, you're not allowed to injure your body. It's even a question in terms of surgery, unless it's necessary, you know. Plastic surgery, it's a whole question. Mm-hmm. If you're not allowed to injure your body. But here, the very mitzvah itself is an injury to the body. The bodily injury caused to that organ is exactly that which is desired. It does not interrupt any vital function, nor does it destroy the power of generation. Circumcision simply counteracts excessive lust. For there is no doubt that circumcision weakens the power of sexual excitement and sometimes lessens the natural enjoyment. The organ necessarily becomes weak when it loses blood and is deprived of its covering from the beginning. Okay, then he goes on. Let me just read it. Our sages say, distinctly, it is hard for a woman with whom an uncircumcised had sexual intercourse to separate from him. This is, as I believe, the best reason for the commandment concerning circumcision. And who was the first to perform this commandment? Abraham, our father, of whom it is well known how he feared sin. It is described by our sages in reference to the words, behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. That's a reference to what he said to Sarah when he was going down to Mitzrayim. So essentially, this is basically what I was basing myself on. Hold on a sec. It means to say that the essence of Adam, the perfection of Adam, has to do with the utilization, not the repression. We don't believe necessarily. We don't believe that the physical pleasures are bad, as other religions do. See, it's a very, very fine point over here. It's a very fine point, but because most religions don't, they can't see the subtlety of the point. So the world is either into lust and hedonism, or it's into repression. And this is not repression because there's something evil about it. No, it's a rational phenomenon. It's a recognition that it's a turning away from the sexual and that the sexual is only, the sexual, of course, represents the passions, all the physical. That is to say that the idea is that we recognize that the only value that the physical has is to satisfy the basic needs, whether they be the needs of our own sustenance, or whether in the sexual it's the needs to procreate the species, it's a mitzvah. But once that is done, we turn away from it. The idea of diminishing the pleasure of the sensual. See, the world is rooted in the attraction of the lust, of the sensual pleasure. And Yadis maintains that the perfection of Adam is when he turns away from that. But turning away per se is not the essence. That's a Gentile idea. Turning away is only of significance if there's a concept of redirecting it. That is, there's no value per se in just living a chaste life, as the Goyim believe. So what's the difference? There's not much difference between a person who's steeped in the physical, a hedonist, and a person that turns away from that and lives in a convent, so to speak, you know, like depriving himself of any physical pleasure. The Rambam says that's it's foolish, it's sinful, that's the way the Goyim live. But moderation, that's the concept. The concept of moderation means that he understands the relationship between the physical part of man and between the higher part of man, which is Tzelem Elokim. And the idea that the Tzelem Elokim rules over the physical. And that's expressed by the fact that he diminishes, the diminishing of the sensual part, in order to redirect that energy towards being expressed in terms of Yedias Hashem. So in my opinion, that is the idea of it's the whole idea of the covenant. It's not just the recognition of Hashem's Baruch Hu, but that recognition leads to a certain understanding of what human being is, and what our purpose in life is. Obviously, for the person just recognizes God and then proceeds to live a hedonistic life. What's the point? That's the covenant. That is the essence of that the way of life. That's a result of that recognition. And that's why I think that's the oath bris, in my opinion. That's why you see it's on. It's a mark of if you take a look at the Birkas HaMazon now, it's beautiful because it says Nedlecha Nodlecha Eretz Chama Tov Rechava V'Yal Shazam Merzam Ufisan Merzam V'Yal Brischa Shechasamta Bistareinu. And see, the Os HaBris is something which is inscribed in our flesh. Of course, you know it's part of the flesh because that represents the ultimate in terms of the flesh, in terms of the sensual. The sense of touch, the sensual enjoyment in Adam. So the means to say that this is the see, making a seal, an inscription, means that this is muktash, that the physical part of man, all the physical forces and all the instinctual forces are necessary because that is the source from which in Adam the energy stems from. It's all muktash to the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the sign. And really what it means to say is, in my opinion, it's a proclamation that Adam is the Tzelem Elokim Nivras Adam. That's what it says in Bereishis. Yivras Adam B'Tzalmo, Tzelem Elokim Boras Adam. So the Jewish people are those people who proclaim that idea that there is one being, that the entire world exists only because of one being, and that Adam, the essence of Adam, is B'Tzelem Elokim, and that's the Brish, that's Chasamta B'Sarenu. That is the very act of diminishing the Os Brish. As the Rambam says, that injury which we do to that Aver is to show that, to the contrary, that the power of the Tzelem Elokim has to overcome, has the ability to overcome the physical and to redirect the physical energies towards the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in my opinion, that's the Yos. The Yos is proclaiming that this being is not a behemoth, but because, you see, to the contrary. That's why the Arel, someone who's an Arel, what did they say to Shem when they want, you know, that whole thing about, you know, Dina? They said, because that's a Nevalot, not a Nevalot, what did they refer to? It's Toeva, how did they refer to it over there? When they made the demand that they all have to circumcise, even though it was deception. I mean,
yeah, okay.
But they said,
where was
it? It's Chepa, right? It was a chirpa for us. It's a degradation to allow our daughters to marry someone who is an Ariel. An Ariel is a is something which is degrading, because essentially it is an individual. It's Adam who is basically in the form of just being another animal, just of an animal. Well,
yeah.
What does it say, cherpa?
Yeah, cherpa.
Yeah, that's the cherpa. What's the cherpa? You see, it's a completely different kind of a mitzvah. It means to say just a behemah. So I mean, there's two ways in which this being can be portrayed. This being can be portrayed as a more sophisticated, but essentially nothing more than an animal. It's an animalistic existence, and even if it engages in intellectual activity, doesn't change it. I mean, some of the biggest intellectuals in the world are basically behemoths. They're basically animals, because it's all in the pursuit of hedonistic. But the hedonistic in man can express itself, you know, in a very sophisticated form, because man is capable of sophistication. But essentially, the underlying bottom line is that the instinctual predominates. And the bris is a group that separates itself from the rest of mankind and lives under the jurisdiction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you're living under the jurisdiction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's an affirmation that we relate to God only through our Tzelem Elohim and through a lifestyle which is based upon the perfection of the Tzelem Elohim in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the ways that God has revealed to us. So that, in my opinion, is the reason why that is the Oath Bris. And then I went on to explain, of course, so that's why it has to be from earliest youth. I mean, a person becomes a Ben Bris, the Chi of Mitzvahs is a result. But the entire training and raising and molding of a personality has to be based upon a certain identity. Mm-hmm. So first you have to give the child an identity. What's the identity? This child is a Talmud like him. Mm-hmm. That's the Oath Bris. See, Al Brischa Shechasam to Bifsarenu, it says that we give praise to God for the fact that this oath is actually inscribed in our flesh. So it's something that is with us all the time. It's a reminder, and it should serve as a reminder of the fact. I think there's a Chazal, I don't remember anymore, that David HaMelech was once in the bathhouse. This is very vague, but I know there is such a Chazal or a Medrash or something like that. I just don't know the source. And maybe you can look it up. And he was like despondent because he wanted to learn. He couldn't learn because he was in the bathhouse. And then he gazed upon his bris milah and he felt better, so to speak. But even there, he was involved. Even in the bathhouse, he can be involved in higher purposes or in mitzvah. In the mitzvah. Tchafishal mitzvah. What does that mean? It means that the contemplation of the idea, the recognition of the idea that he's a different type of a being. And that the realization of that, that the entire purpose of life is that man is unique and distinct, that even though he's physical, he has the capacity to be involved in the world of ultimate MS. That's what it really should reflect. Now you can see that. I mean, it's that's why it must be that oath is in our basar, because the basar, after all is said and done, that's the biggest obstacle. I mean, it's the seat of all taiva, and that's why that particular aver, which is the ultimate expression of taiva, mm-hmm. That's the real idea. The overcoming of the sensual. Mm-hmm. Now you can, after that will give you a bridge to an understanding of the idea, unamaltam as olaf levavcham, you know. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to conclude, though, of course, now you see why the mitzvah is on the af, because that's the essential idea of having a child. The idea of having a child is not just not to have children, and certainly not to satisfy your own, you know, childish emotions of immortality and so on and so on, egotism. That's what most people have children for. But it's really a service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring him into the bris. That's the whole idea. The whole mitzvah of puravu, which is unique to the Jewish people, has to do with the bris. So therefore, at the earliest possible time, you know, why 8 days? I'm not going to go into 8 days as opposed to 7 days, whatever. The Rambam explains at that point in time, there are other practical considerations. I mean, the child is still young, and it won't harm him in any way. I mean, you see the Torah, every aspect is perfect, but it's done it before the time the child can really even localize the pain or be harmed psychologically by the event and all of that. But Now we understand. I mean, that's the Av. The Av has to be machnasim into the bris, because that's the essential responsibility. That's the essential purpose of having children, is to bring them into the bris. But the first thing you have to do is to establish the identity. Yeah, so that's then. That's establishing our identity. Once a person recognizes that, then the Al-Karasra should not know. Then you need Torah. Then you have Torah. But there's no point in giving Torah to a person who's essentially a hedonist. And he's just going to approach Torah from the standpoint of a hedonistic way of life. It's interesting that I can't give a full share on that now. I have it on tape, though. But you see that in Mitzrayim, the Karban Pesach, Parshas HaChodesh, so that was the Geula, the night of the Geula. Did they go out? Sometimes it says Otesias Mitzrayim Loila, but then it says Macharas HaPesach, they went out. I mean, the Ramban explains it, that the night, and then he says the Jews could not have left Mitzrayim at night, because his command was Lo Seitzu B'Pesach Beso, that no one was permitted to leave the door of his house that night. The night that they brought the Korban Pesach, the night that God smote the Bechor, the Mitzrayim. So anyway, so clearly they didn't leave that night. But Paro, summoned them and insisted that they leave immediately. But Moshe said that we're not going to leave like thieves in the night. We're going to go in the morning, Yad Ramah. So it's clear they, when they left like, organized like a people with pride, Yad Ramah. That was in the morning. That was the Yitzhiyah. But the Geula, that's why the Torah sometimes referred to as, sometimes we'll say that they left it, that they were taken out. They were taken out of the state of slavery. Yeah, but that was through the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. So it's interesting, the Rashi says that, the idea of the two damim, let me see if I can find it here, hold it a second, that's in Shemos, it's in Bo, I believe. In Bo, it's there is a Rashi of the Elder, I'll find it in a second. Maris, that's in Yud Beis Vav. See where it says, Rashi goes into the fact that that it should be the Mishmeris, you should guard it. That it means that it has to be inspected from Mum for 4 days before the Shechita. So, there's certain differences between Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Doros. Perhaps you remember there's tapes in the library. But so Rashi gives different explanations. And he quotes, if you have the Rashi there, Rav Masi ben Cheresh Omer Harei Hi Omer Hu Omer Ve'ever Olayech, it says in the Navi, Ve'erech Ve'hinei Itcha Eis Dodim, that God, so to speak, passed over them and saw that it was a time of love. The time had come for the Shua that God would redeem the children. And they were lacking in mitzvahs in order to be redeemed. It says you were naked and bare, which means naked. That is to say that from a physical standpoint, all the elements were there for the Jewish nation, but they were naked and bare. Naked means they didn't have a purpose. They didn't have mitzvahs. Again, it's another important reminder in our contemporary world that you can't have a Jewish nationalism without mitzvahs. It's called naked and bare. So God gave them two mitzvahs, Dam Pesach and Dam Milah. That's interesting. So what is the connection between Pesach and Milah? Shemalu b'yoso halayla, that they circumcised that night. Shenema misposesas b'namayach. That they were like in their blood. They were steeped, so to speak, in their blood. It's plural, the shnei damim, two bloods. Another quote is that I sent you out in the blood of the bris. I sent out asirecha, your prisoners. You bore in mayimbo, a pit in which there wasn't water. And then it says again, v'shahayu, continue, v'shahayu shtufim b'avod tzkacharim. And also they were steeped in idolatry. Alalaham, God said to them, mishku k'chulachem. I mean, serious thing. You see that the Korban Pesach, The Korban Pesach has some, there's a connection between the Korban Pesach and between the Mila. See, the two damim, the bloods. And those two, as I said, those are the only assays which carry the kares. If you don't do it, bittul mitzvah. So here it says, Mishku ukru, pull and take for yourself. That's the plain shot. Mishku yidecha me'avod estacham, pull your hands from idolatry. Zechula lachem tzon shal mitzvah, and take a tzon shal mitzvah. And that is a very profound idea, and I can't go into it, the whole implications. I mean, it has to do with Korban and the Rambam. It seems to fit into the Rambam that that the God couldn't just tell them to give up, idolatry in one, one motion, but they had to sort of redirect. You see the idea of redirecting, to use that same mode of worship in a different type of a system which is based upon mitzvahs. But it seems to me that this is an affirmation that here you see the two elements of the covenant. On the night of Pesach, that was Geula. Because the two elements of the covenant are the correct, the renunciation of Avodah Zarah, which, and the affirmation of the correct idea of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's expressed in Korban Pesach. That's one element of the bris. And the other element of the bris is the definition of Adam. That Adam is the Tzelem Elokim. And he's not simply a mechanical being and an instinctual being and whose essential purpose is just to satisfy his passions, but to redirect the energies toward the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why that has Mila. And that's why it says, Kol Orei Lo Yochal Bo. That anyone who's not involved in Mila, so he's not a Ben Bris. He's not part of the covenant. Because this is the Os Bris that, which defines him as being a different type of a being. And those two ideas come together. The idea that the entire world exists only because of the existence of this supreme being that we recognize as the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the second idea is that we have the Tzelem Elokim Baras Adam. So the first idea is expressed through the Korban Pesach, because the Jews had to reconstitute themselves. They could not. That's what the Navi says. They had reconstituted themselves physically, from a physical standpoint. They had the elements of nationhood. But from the idea of the bris, of being the people of the bris, that was lacking. And they couldn't be redeemed without that. They couldn't be redeemed. What's been redeemed? The whole idea of the redemption was the people of the bris, to maintain the bris. So that had to be reconstituted on both levels. One was the return to the absolutely true idea of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the second one was to rendering Klal Yisrael as people who were fit to be B'nai Bris, to enter the Bris. That's the Mila. Okay, fellas.
Ready?
Right?
Ready?
Yeah.
I have a question. If the Bris is to show that you're part of the covenant, right? Then why don't you have a nose for a girl?
Well, that's a different kind of a question. I mean, the women have a different role in the men... The men are the ones, essentially, who are responsible. There's many reasons for these types of things. The Oath Bris, let's put it this way, the Oath Bris is a kiyum in the nation. So, certain things, this defines the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, it just, when God chooses certain things, I can't explain. Obviously, in the construction of man, physically, it lent itself to that. And also the men have the responsibility, to set the tone and so on and so forth. It has to do with many things. So therefore, it's not like a mitzvah. This is fully in line with what I was saying, that the mitzvah is very different. In terms of mitzvah, so women have to do mitzvahs, men have to do mitzvahs. There's no difference. Unless there's a specific exclusion, because it's mitzvah seishes man grama, and so on and so forth.
Right.
So those have to do with the other mitzvahs, which are part of the system. But here it's a different kind of a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah which is essential because there must be that this ummah has to have an oz bris. So if the ummah has to have an oz bris, it doesn't necessarily mean it has to be in every person. You see?
Right.
But once the oz is chosen, so it's chosen. Now the reason over here is very clear. Women, women are constructed differently, physically, and so on and so forth. There's nothing. And two, first of all, it's more important, I believe, that it be with men because the men are the leaders. They set the tone. That's That's just the way it's going to be. I'm not getting involved in those kinds of issues. Yeah. No, that's the truth. And secondly, but you see also, I mean, like, you could have that question coming from a different angle. Like, if you give the whole idea about Nida.
Right.
That the purpose of Nida is really pretty much the same idea.
Yeah, yeah.
You see, is to reduce the sexual, that there has to be separation and control and discipline. And even a woman that's with it to you at certain points has to be. So then why, some people ask that question. So why is that with the cycle? You know, the woman be having the menstruation and so forth. Why is it in men? So there again, I mean, there's particulars. I mean, it works out perfectly because women, the way women are constructed, they have this regularly, you know,
right. This
recurring thing, et cetera, et cetera. So there's not, the halacha has to be based upon something concrete. Men don't have the same type of thing. So, you know, like, it's efficient. Therefore, so men are never usher in tashrish. Men never have a state where they have an isser tashrish per se. Okay?
Yeah.
But women do. Because that's, so you have the other side over there. In this particular case, it doesn't have to be expressed in every person. You see, the fact that it's expressed in men, that defines the ummah. That's sufficient, because it goes back to what I said before. It's not just a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah which is an oath birth. Okay?